Want to try? Too complicated. Okay. Shri Rishi Ahuchu. The great sages said, Tvam, you. Naha, our. Tapaha, austerity. Paramam, topmost. Atta, instructed. Yat, which. Atmatejaha, your spiritual power. Yena, by which. Idam, this material world. Adipurusha, of supreme original personality of Godhead. Atmagatam, merged within yourself. Sasarta, you created. Tat, that process of austerity and penance. Vipraluptam, stolen. Amuna, by the demon Hiranyakashipu. Aja, now. Sharanyapala, O supreme maintainer
of those who need to be sheltered.
Raksha Grihita Vapusha, by your body, which you accept to give protection. Punaha, again. Anvamamstaha, you have approved. Translation. All the saintly persons present offer their prayers in this way. O Lord, O supreme maintainer of those sheltered at your lotus feet, original personality of Godhead, the process of austerity and penance in which you have instructed us before is the spiritual power of your very self. It is by austerity that you create the material world which lies dormant within you. This austerity was almost stopped by the activities of this demon, but now by yourself appearing in the form of Nrisimhadeva, which is meant just to give us protection. And by killing this demon, you have again approved the process of austerity. So purport by His Divine Grace, Śrīla Prabhupāda, Śrīla Prabhupāda Ki Jai. The living entities wandering within the jurisdiction of the 8,400,000 species of life get the opportunity for self-realization in the human form of, and gradually in such other elevated forms as those of the demigods, Kinnaras and Charanas, as will be described below. In the higher statuses of life, beginning from human life, the main duty is tapasya, or austerity. As Rishabhadeva advised his sons, tapo divyam putrakayena sattvam shuget, to rectify our material existence, austerity or tapasa is absolutely necessary. However, when people in general come under the control of a demon or a demoniac ruling power, they forget this process of tapasya, and gradually also become demoniac. All the saintly persons who were generally engaged in austerity felt relieved when Hiranyakashipu was killed by the Lord in the form of Nrisimhadeva. They realized that the original instruction concerning human life, that it is meant for tapasya, for self-realization, was reaffirmed by the Lord when he killed Hiranyakashipu. So she, Rishaya Uchu, Tvam Nastapa Paramatta Yadatma Tejo Yena Tam Nadi Purushatma Gatam Sasakta Tad Vipraluptam Amunadya Sharanya Pala Raksha Grihita Vapusha Punar Anva Mamstaha Om Ganat Timiranda Shagaranjana Shalakaya Chakshuna Miritam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So this word tapasya or tapasa is very interesting. It is mentioned here, this is actually the original
instruction in the universe. That's interesting. Here's a story for you. Once upon a time, there was darkness. And like in the Bible, it says there was darkness, and God said, let there be light. Anyone know that? So once upon a time, same thing in the Vedic literatures, everything was dark. And the Lord was lying down in his form of Garbhodakshaya Vishnu in each and every universe, these unlimited universes. And out of his navel came a lotus flower. And out of that lotus flower, there was Lord Brahma who was born. And when Lord Brahma was born, it was, because it was dark, he couldn't figure out what to do. He was bewildered. And so he thought he'd try to figure things out by himself. And so he took a dive. He dove into the stem of the lotus. And it's also described in the stem of the lotus as has all the different planetary systems within it. But at that time, they had not really been manifest. So he dove into the stem of the lotus, and he couldn't figure out anything. It was all dark. He couldn't see anything. And then he heard two syllables. What syllables? Oh, you know the story. Tapa, tapa, austerities. So he climbed back up and sat down in the lotus flower and meditated. Something like 100 celestial years. And after that time, Krishna came and did what?
Krishna told him what to do.
Not only that, Krishna shook his hand, as described. So this shaking hands is not something only in modern culture. Actually, it's the first greeting within the universe. It's interesting, isn't it? So people think it's only, a Western thing. So Krishna didn't go, namaste. Krishna said, how do you do? He said, my name is Krishna. What's yours?
My name is Brahma.
My name is Brahma. Oh, yeah, nice to meet you. I'm God. Who are you? I'm your servant. So, so in other words, it actually does describe in the Bhagavatam that he shook his hand like that, which is interesting. So then Lord Brahma had manifest to him not only his duties, which you mentioned, but also the whole spiritual realm. And he composed a very nice prayer. What's the prayer called? None of the adults. What's the prayer called? Yeah, but what's the name of the prayer? Starts with a B.
Brahma Samhita.
So it's Brahma Samhita. He composed, describing the Lord's position, who the Lord is, and describing the spiritual world, describing who the demigods are, Ganesh. Ganesh holds the Lord's lotus feet on his little tumali, which is like antennas. Did you know that? Like little antennas. Like Lord's lotus feet. Because actually the devotees always aspire to keep the Lord's lotus feet and the dust of the Lord's feet on their head, and actually they rub it all over their bodies. I was actually hearing a nice story this morning about Lord Chaitanya's kirtans in the house of Srivas Thakur. One time Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was dancing, and he kept dancing. He said, I don't feel any ecstasy. What's the problem? Someone must have taken the dust of my feet while I was dancing or unconscious before. So therefore I've offended a Vaishnava. It's a fact. I mean, actually, if someone takes the dust of your feet and they're more advanced than you, or they're advanced Vaishnava, or to speak of an incarnation of God, then you actually suffer. Because you... If someone like takes the dust of your feet and they're a neophyte and you're a pure devotee, that's okay. But anyway, so Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu generally didn't like people taking the dust of his feet. Once in a while he gave permission. So it was revealed, everyone was scared. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was saying, someone has done this, they don't experience any ecstasy. And then what happened is When the Advaitacharya revealed, they said, yes, when you were unconscious, I did the dust of your feet and rubbed it all over my body and everything like that. I was in ecstasy. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu got really angry with him, started screaming at him. He said, look, it's a very interesting story I was listening to this morning. He said, look, you know, describing Advaitacharya's position, he said, at the end of the universe, your duty is to destroy everything. And basically he said, by taking the dust of my feet, you've destroyed me too. You're not supposed to destroy God, in other words. In other words, Lord Chaitanya was showing how important it is to have the proper Vaishnava etiquette. And then Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was joking. He said, you are a thief. And of course, the Advaitacharya actually said something very interesting. He said, if someone wants to steal from the master and he can't do it while the master is awake, he has to wait till the master is sleeping. Which is interesting. And Lord Chaitanya got really angry and said, you're a thief. And he said, I'm going to make sure that this is rectified. And what he did is, because Lord Chaitanya was a lot stronger than the Advaitacharya, because the Advaitacharya was much older, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu basically tackled him. And then he took the dust of Advaitacharya's feet and rubbed it all over his body and was dancing in ecstasy. Anyway. So this is very, very, very interesting. So let's get back to the point of tapasya. So that's, of course, we were describing how Ganesh holds the lotus, feet on his head. Very, very nice. And of course, the dust of the lotus feet of Krishna and the pure devotees are very powerful substances, as well as the foot bathing water and the prashadam remnants. Very, very powerful substances. So anyway, so Lord Brahma composed the Brahma Samhita, describing everything, and then he was able to create the universes after he engaged in tapasya. So the first instruction in this universe is tapa, to engage in tapasya. So let's try to understand what tapasya is. Because it sounds very frightening. You know, you talk about austerity. Actually, there's two words, austerity and penance. Penance is slightly different than austerity. Generally, penance means you're doing something because you did something wrong to rectify it. They have even in the religion I was trained up with, they had a day of penance every year, in which you actually, I mean, of course, also in the Catholic religion, they have this confession, which is a sort of penance thing, that you, there's one day, it's called the Day of Atonement. You know, atonement? That's a big word. Do you know what atonement means? That means you, the kids don't know what it means. It means you've done something wrong. In order to purify yourself, you have to do something. Because on this day, they fast for half a day. It's the only fast day of the whole religion. And they fast for half a day, and they go into the religious, it's called the synagogue, the religious building, and they just say, forgive us, Lord, for what we did. Forgive us, Lord, for what we did. Forgive us, Lord, for what we did. All the prayers are just basically prayers for forgiveness. That's atonement. And even the monks, you know what a monk is? No. Not the things that, you know, steal your glasses in Vrindavan. Yeah, like the monks, they would engage in these systems of atonement that were really interesting. One time I went into this place in New York City called Ripley's Believe It or Not. And it showed the types of torture the monks would voluntarily subject themselves to. They would actually lie on beds of nails. That's all in the Veda culture. They also have done that too. And they would wear this thing called hair shirts, which is very itchy. Very itchy even. And there was one movie many years ago, it was called The Da Vinci Code. I don't know if any of you saw that movie. Where you had this one Christian, he was whipping himself. It was called self-flagellation. He was actually, you know, with chains or something like that, and he was bleeding. And even in the Muslim culture, the Shiites take the swords and they hit each other. Did you know that? I think that's on The Appearance of Ali or something like that, if I remember correctly. So they actually hit each other and they're running through the streets hitting each other with swords and bleeding. So we should do that in our religion? No, you don't want to do that? That would be fun.
No.
So that's that's penance, which is slightly different. You know, penance is slightly different just from austerities. Because penance means basically you've done something wrong, and the penitential, even in, there's this interesting statement in the Vedic literature, the penitential woods. You know, when you go to the forest and you perform some penance like that for something you've done wrong. Like if I say, Keshva, you didn't study properly, now you should do some penance. You didn't get a good grade, so you should do penance and not have access to your iPod for 2 days. That's your penance.
That's actually happened.
It's happened? So now you know to tell your father that's penance. And you're atoning for your sins.
I misplaced it.
You misplaced it? That's even worse.
I lost it for 2 days.
Well, I disabled it.
All right. So that's what penance is. It's generally something like atonement for something you've done. Of course, we don't really have to do that. We simply, according to the Srimad Bhagavatam, Tasmat Sankirtanam Vishnu Jangam Mangala Manasam Mahatamapi Kauravya Vidyakantika Nishkritam, that if one preaches Krishna consciousness or engages in Sankirtan, that's the best atonement. In other words, if you've done something wrong, let's say you fallen down and you smoke some ganja. You know what ganja is? No. Marijuana? You've heard about that before? That's what the hippies and... Actually, so many people smoke that here, isn't it? And if you've done that, let's say you did it by accident. Of course, accident. It's hard to do it by accident. You pick it up. Oh, anyway. Let's say you've done that. It's not that you have to torture yourself for 2 weeks just to rectify your consciousness. You engage directly in Krishna consciousness. Actually, Prabhupada said that when a devotee fell, devotees would fall down. You know what falling down means? No. Falling down is actually an expression that Prabhupada came up with, and the other expression was bloop. You've heard the bloop? Okay, I'll explain what blooping means. Now you're learning something new. That Prabhupada said when the living entity left the spiritual world, it was like someone falling out of an airplane. And it was like, and when he hit the water, how did it sound? Bloop. You can try that. You can throw a stone, not that you should jump, but you throw a stone into the water, and all of a sudden, isn't it like if you're close by here, bloop. So Prabhupada actually invented that word to indicate that devotees have fell down. You ever heard the blooping before? Prabhupada would say that so-and-so has blooped from the Krishna consciousness movement. So it's actually, you know, it's actually a Prabhupadaism. Because there's no such word in the English dictionary, blooped. What?
It wasn't there.
No, it wasn't there in the English dictionary. It's something called onomatopoetic. That's a fancy word. Which means the word means or sounds like what it means. Can you think of another word that sounds like what it means?
Sounds like what it means.
I'll give you an example. Bark. No. Like a dog barks.
Oh, and bark. Like,
yeah, yeah.
The tree bark.
No. The dog barking.
Yeah.
The word sounds like the bark.
Chatter.
Meowing.
Yeah, meow is another one. Bark. Meow.
Chirp. Frog.
Chirp.
The frog. Hopping.
Croaks. Croaks. So a lot of words in English are like that. And also in Sanskrit. I like that. That's called onomatopoetic. That's the thing. Now you learn it. If you use that word in a teacher, she'll be very impressed with you. I'm teaching you things where you can just astound the teacher. So bloop, don't use the word bloop on the teacher because it's not an English word. It's a Prabhupada invented word. Bloop. So anyway, so the point is that when devotees would loop, I had to explain what that meant, or fall down, in other words, they went back to their previous activities, whatever they were, you know, smoking or drinking or whatever. Devotees would say to Prabhupada, you know, what should we do if we want to come back? And Prabhupada said, just engage in devotional service. You don't have to, we don't have any specific method of pious chitta, it's called. Atonement. We just engage in Krishna's service and then Krishna takes care of it. We just start chanting again. It's not that you have to, you know, do some hellish austerity, you know, torture yourself. Although sometimes the Lord does prescribe austerities. I was hearing a story in the, another story in the Chaitanya Bhagavat. You know, Jagai and Madai, you've heard that story before? Jagai and Madai, of course, Madai hit Lord Nityananda on the head and he caused Lord Nityananda to bleed. Jagai, of course, saved Lord Nityananda. But what happened is that even after Jagai and Madai got the mercy of Lord Chaitanya and they attained pure devotional service, Madai was feeling very guilty. You ever felt guilty about anything you did? You know what guilt is? That means you feel real bad. Oh my God, how did I do that? How did I hurt that person? Oh my God, what can I do? And then you go up to the person and say, please forgive me. I didn't mean it. Right? You ever do that? See? That's actually a sign of humanity. That means you have a conscience when you feel guilty. So Madai was feeling guilty. And he was just depressed, getting more and more depressed. Even though he loved Krishna, he was getting more and more depressed because he was thinking, this hand, I have hurt the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I have caused him to bleed. And so he waited until he found Lord Nityananda alone. And then he revealed his mind to Lord Nityananda. He said, my dear Lord, most merciful personality of Godhead, that I with this hand, what can I do? Save me. I know Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has accepted my sinful reactions and purified me, but save me. Tell me something I can do to rectify myself, you know, to feel better, at least get rid of this, what's called the swaj, which means getting rid of the sense of guilt. And then Lord Nityananda said, all right, here's a penance you can do. What you should do is build with your own hands. And also, yeah, here's another thing, that he was feeling guilty not only for hurting Lord Nityananda, but he was feeling guilty for offending so many Vaishnavas and so many people. Because he was torturing people in Navadvip. And he said, I've offended so many people, I can't even remember all the people I've offended. So Lord Nityananda said, all right, here's what you should do. You should build a bathing ghat. You know what a bathing ghat is? Okay, explain what that is. So we have to be careful with the children that they understand these words. A bathing ghat is, let's say you have a river. And then in order to bathe in the river, usually you just don't go through the mud. You have to make steps, right? You've seen that in India?
Yeah.
There's steps. That's a ghat. It's called a ghat. That's another new word for you.
Oh, yeah, the one we saw with you in the
Radhakund, Shyamakund, that's a ghat, where they have steps going down to the water. So Lord Nityananda said you have to build a bathing ghat for all the residents of Navadvip. And so Madai, with his own two hands, he was built this bathing ghat, and whenever the Vaishnavas came after he built it, he was serving them. In this way, they all became amazed at his, you know, penitential, that means his remorseful attitude, and they blessed him. So this is very interesting. So there are certain things we do. Like if we offend people, yes, there is a certain type of penance we should need to do, which is go and serve those same people we offended. Like if you ever offended your parents, you should serve them. You should go to them and say, I am your humble servant. Whatever you want, Peter Shri. Can you do that? No, I don't think you can do that.
Sometimes I do it.
You do it as sometimes. Tricky when you want something.
My dad comes to climb on his back and then
I massage him. That's all right. Children have to have a good time. It's important they have good memories. Because these, you know, what the memories they have right now will actually keep them for their whole lives. The adults, you know, whatever they are, they are. There's not too much I can do with adults. They're just lost souls. for the children. No, I mean, whatever you are. I mean, your habits, it's hard to change at this particular point. But the children, you know, they have some memories, and this will actually keep them their whole lives. So, anyway, so if we offend someone, there is a specific penance. But normally in devotional service, we simply engage again in devotional service if we make some mistake. It's not that we have to torture the body like the Christians did. I gave the example the Christians would do in the punishments they had the monks. Remember the monks, like Buddhist monks and Christian monks, the punishments that they would do. We don't have to do that stuff. So that's penance. All right, so let's get to austerity, which is slightly different than penance. Austerity is performed to achieve some specific purpose. You may or may not have done something wrong, but you want to accomplish something. For example, if you want to make money, what do you have to do?
You have to work for it.
Work for it. That's an austerity, isn't it? I mean, don't you have to wake up and go to work in the morning, even if you're tired? And you know, people are so tired nowadays, of course, they have to drink several cups of coffee to get themselves going. I mean, devotees shouldn't do that. Devotees can just take a lot of chili peppers in the morning.
Oh.
instead of coffee. That's a Vaishnava way. Or this horseradish is good to wake you up in the morning. But that's an austerity. I remember my father, and I've used him as an example many times, he would get up at 3 o'clock every morning to go to work. He never chanted his rounds. He was very negligent in his devotional practice. He got up at 3 o'clock and he'd come back at 11 o'clock at night. Every day. Because he owned a dry cleaning business. And he had to go to start the boilers in the morning. You understand? The boilers, so you know what a boiler is? It boils water and other things, so that all the people came into work at 7, so he had to be ready for him. So this is when he started work. Later on, it was more relaxed. But he had to perform great austerities for money, right? Anything you want in this material world, you have to perform austerities for. If you want money, let's say if you want to be a good piano player, what do you have to do?
You have to learn how to play the piano.
You have to practice hours a day. Or if you want to run in the Olympics, you know what the Olympics are?
Yeah.
Then you have to practice, just like yesterday you had some sort of like Rakshasa game. In the stadium here, right?
Yeah.
And so he... yeah, that'd be fun. you know, the Rakshasas had their day. So,
rugby,
yeah. So they have to practice continually. They have to perform austerities in order to, you know, keep their muscles up and to have their coordination. And then they have to learn different, tactics, right? They have to study. It's not only they're out there in the field, they probably have like a little board that you write down, you know, when this happens, we do this, we do that, you know, there's a whole system. So that's austerity. I mean, basically when you see them out there in the field, it's very little time compared to the amount of preparation time. You know, training, practice and everything like that. So that's austerity, to achieve something even materially. So sometimes we find immature spiritualists, they think that you don't have to do that in spiritual life. They think spiritual life should just be, you know, just sit back and eat prasadam and go back to Godhead. Like, you know, even they quote from Prabhupada said that you can just eat your way back to Godhead. You ever heard that quote? Eat your way back to Godhead. Prabhupada was joking. Because actually you really have to perform austerities. Now, not austerities that are painful, but you have to reject everything that's not favorable for Krishna consciousness and accept things that are favorable. In other words, things you might be attracted to. You have to just say, Krishna would not be pleased, and you don't do those things. And things that you may not be attracted to, You have to do because they're pleasing to Krishna. Like it says, happiness in the mode of passion is what? Do you remember?
The happiness in the mode of passion is like nectar
in the beginning,
but poison at the end. The vegetable service is poison in the beginning.
It appears to be like poison, yeah.
Nectar
at the end. Yeah, it's a very important principle to understand. And I gave the example the other day when people come out of a movie theater, come out of Disney World or whatever, they're actually completely miserable. I gave the example, I only distributed books to people going into these things. And when they came out, they were just like so grouchy. You know what grouchy means?
Yeah, angry.
Crabby. It's like last night, someone gave me a picture of a crab. And I said, well, it's a picture of one of my disciples, many of my disciples. So, they're crabby. Anyway, so, not all of them. So that's like the happiness in Krishna consciousness. In other words, it's an austerity. You have to do things. Like, when I joined the movement, I had to do something that was so painful. Waking up early in the morning. Because before I joined the movement, I was accustomed to waking up at 10 or 11 in the morning.
Oh my God.
Yeah, this is the norm. Except when you go to the university. When you go to the university, then I got up earlier. You know, I got up right before the first class at 8 o'clock in the morning. You know, woke up at 7:45, you know, splashed some water on my face and ran to class. That was early morning for me. But the weekends was late. And so I was just thinking, how can I join that movement and wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning, ungodly hour? Isn't that, they call it an ungodly hour of the morning. And I just like, oh no, I have to do it. So I moved in the temple. And I did it, but it was tough in the beginning. It was, and taking cold showers, like we mentioned the other day. You heard me talking about that?
Austerity,
but actually it's good. Prabhupada said, the children should be trained up. Now they're not going to like to hear this. So they enjoy austerity. It's blissful. He was describing that as a gurukul training. They enjoy austerity. Not that it's forced upon them, but it's blissful. You know, because you're so happy when you do this austerity. I'm just like when we were young, sometimes we would go camping. You know what camping is? And it's austere. Because you have to, like, you know, build a fire to cook your food. You know, there's a lot of austerities, but it was fun. So Krishna consciousness is something like that. If you voluntarily do these austerities, not waking up early. I mean, nowadays, it's many devotees or most devotees don't even wake up early anymore. It's like, not done. You're up all night, so you don't have to worry. He's doing a lot of austerities. Driving a bus all night, right? That's pretty austere. So, but this is important. The austerities mentioned by Prabhupada and by Srila Rupa Goswami. Rising early, chanting your rounds early, reading Srimad Bhagavatam, and preaching Krishna consciousness. And these austerities are kevalananda kanda. They simply give you happiness. But in the beginning, you really have to use your intelligence to get yourself to do it. I'm supposed to get up. You know, you look at your watch in the morning. You know, nowadays they have alarm clocks where you have a snooze feature on it, right? It gives you like another half hour sleep. You go, boom. Nectar, you know. You ever see that? So, anyway, we have to use our intelligence and to conquer over the mind to do the austerities for Krishna. And there's sometimes a lot of difficulty or even, you know, a little pain. What do they say? No pain? No gain. And Prabhupada also said, an easy time in Krishna consciousness is no advancement. So you have to really push yourself. Athletes who are performing all these games, they have to push themselves to the limit. You understand? Mm-hmm. And then you become happy. I mean, I'm happy. I'm pushing myself. I mean, maybe not to the limit. I can't brag about that. But, you know, push yourself a little bit and then you become happy. Because that's really what we want to be, is happy, right? And the other opposite side of austerity is just eat, sleep, and be merry, or eat, drink, and be merry. and then you become miserable. Did you ever see a happy drunk person? No. So that's the opposite side of austerity. Just let it all, as the hippies would say, let it all hang out. If it feels good, it's good for you. Did you hear that saying? But it's not true. You have to do things that sometimes are a little bit difficult to achieve spiritual goal. Okay, so anyway, so this is what's being discussed here, that the austerities are very, very important. Of course, what is that? Tapasa, brahmacharyena, samenacha, dhamenacha. And that's how we get trained in Krishna consciousness. I was very, very, very lucky to get trained as a brahmachari when I was young. Not quite as young as you, Keshu. It was like 20, 21 years old. I was very lucky to have that strict training because that's held me through all my Krishna consciousness. So it's good for devotees to get it. Now, I know nowadays most devotees who join are not, you know, they have family and everything like that. But they need to take upon that as their own duty to train themselves in austerity. Or they can go for some retreat sometime, like to Govardhan with us, and we can make them do austerities. Like we did with you. We got up.
I would love to do it again.
But that was nice, that story. We'd get up early in the morning, earlier than you're normally accustomed to getting up, right?
And then did
arti. Well, we did parikrama every morning, right? Every morning.
Yeah.
And that was an austerity, but it was fun after a while.
Yeah.
In the beginning, when you first got up, I remember you going, do I have to get up?
That was on the first.
And then after that, after you went out, started going out, it was fun, right?
Yeah.
That's Krishna consciousness. In the beginning, there's crying. In the end, it's like nectar. All right. So any questions or comments on any of these points? Questions, comments, arguments? No? We have, yes?
On the topic of austerities, you said that we need to perform them even to achieve spiritual goals.
No, even material goals, what to speak of spiritual goals.
So are there certain spiritual austerities that might come under that?
We don't want to invent spiritual austerities. Prabhupada said the material world's miserable enough as it is. You know, Prabhupada was not, his primary austerity was preaching. And he didn't really stress the physical austerities other than getting up early. Even on Ekadasi, he would have special Ekadasi feasts prepared. You know, no grains. But actually it was like, Ekadasi was like a feast day for us when I first joined the movement. That would be nice, wouldn't it? And, you know, of course, nowadays we know so many things to prepare in Ekadasi. You have, you know, quinoa, you have buckwheat, so many things you can do. So Prabhupada didn't emphasize physical austerities or staying up all night on Ekadasi. Prabhupada didn't do that. He simply engaged all of his energy in preaching Krishna consciousness. And that's really Tasmad Sankirtan, Vishnur, Janda Mangalam, Angasap. So that's really the most important austerity. To be engaged in the preaching and the chanting of the Lord's holy names. We don't really want so many physical austerities.
No, because I read many places that Prabhupada said that, you know, the only way to please me is to distribute Prabhupada's books and sort of what's I was wondering if
he didn't say the only way, he said the way to please me the most.
Right.
Yeah. So the only way is a difficult thing, because then you're gonna give guilt to everybody who's not out distributing Prabhupada's books. But or contribute to the distribution of Prabhupada's books in one way or the other, yeah.
So does doing that activity result in greater advancement than, say, just chanting itself? Or
well, we have to chant ourselves to make ourselves fit for preaching. I mean, you can't give up the chanting. But what pleases Krishna the most is bringing other jiva souls back to him. Hmm. That's the point.
Prasadam
distribution or assisting. I mean, even if you're just cooking in the kitchen and you're not actually going out and distributing, then you're actually engaged in the sankirtan. You know, prasadam distribution or, you know, preaching on the internet. Even if you can't move, you can have it like a class on the internet for other people. Like we have at least 10 people watching us this morning. from all over the world. And so, you know, that's preaching. So even if I'm by myself, I can just give a class to many people. I can just sit in my room by myself and preach to the whole world. So even using modern technology, you can actually increase the preaching of Krishna consciousness.
So why did Prabhupada say that distributing books is most pleasing?
Because he saw that, as did his spiritual master, as the Brihat Mridanga, the bigger Mridanga. In other words, it's the most effective method, distributing knowledge, of bringing people to Krishna's lotus feet. The Prabhupada would often talk about the communist revolution, especially in China, where they had Mao Zedong. They had this little red book. Everybody was reading the red book. And also in Russia, where communism became manifest because of Karl Marx's writings, and of course Lenin and like that. And people read these books. So, I mean, culture is changing to a certain extent now. People don't read as much as they used to. It's not so much. I've seen even amongst devotees, it's not a reading culture anymore. That's unfortunate. I mean, when I joined the movement, because we were mostly, as I mentioned last night, we were mostly very educated, university-educated people. So we really had a culture of reading, sitting down and reading. We would sneak away to read books. And where the temple president couldn't find us, if we were brahmacharis, just so we could read. But now I don't see that at all. Not very. I mean, as soon as a book arrived, the devotees would find a way to read it. But now I haven't seen that at all, isn't it? In the modern day world, especially in Fiji, it's not a reading culture. I mean, the books will sit and gather dust on the shelf for like 200 years. And the only time they pull it out is when the person dies to read it. Then they read it. Finally, they read the Bhagavad Gita at the funeral. It's too late by that point. So that's unfortunate. It's unfortunate. Things have changed. People want to be more, because of the media, people want to be more entertained rather than, just sit back. It's more of a passive type of life. You just sit back and absorb things. Or you don't absorb things, actually. But you just sit back and are entertained. Like the TV is just very passive. Whereas reading is more active. Because you use your imagination. You read about something, you actually picture it in your mind's eye. But when you see something on the TV, you don't need to use that whole part of your brain. Your brain shuts down. Because you just see it.
And you're like a zombie.
You become like a zombie, yeah. It actually shuts down the brain, television. Right? Yeah, I'm like a zombie. You say, all right, eat prasadam. Like that. And then you become a blind follower, if anything. We see that also in ISKCON. There's a lot of blind following now. Guru groupies. And rather than, this Prabhupada said, use your intelligence. No, blind following is condemned, Prabhupada said in the Gita. So we see that happens a lot right now with many new devotees, disciples, and things like that. It just becomes almost like rock and roll stars rather than using their brains anymore. We were all trained up when I joined the movement to preach almost immediately after you joined. I was giving Sunday feast lectures 6 months into the movement, when I was 6 months in the movement. The temple president just said, you're giving the Sunday feast lecture this Sunday. 6 months. Just initiation. Because I took initiation in 6 months. And I had to sit down and preach to everybody. And I did it. And then you learn. But nowadays, everybody's just passive. They just want to watch. Someone will give class. And they'll just watch. They won't even think about it. The mind will just go blank after about 15 minutes. That was a nice class. What did I say? Well, it was nice. And the memory, start losing your ability to remember things when you're just a passive learner. You actually lose your ability to memorize. But when you repeat, if it's interactive, you can actually memorize and remember things better. Unfortunately, society has changed like that. Everybody's house you go into now has this big widescreen TV. And some of them it's as big as this wall all the way from this side to that side. And now we were in the car the other day, they're just advertising Now they have a curved screen TV. OLED. You seen that?
No.
You know, OLED. Curved screen. So like it curves around you. That's the latest thing. I think Samsung has that, or LG, you know, LG has come up with that, where you just sit there and just like, and then 3D, you know, then you put on the 3D glasses and you're immersed.
Like everything, wow, what's that?
Yeah, in virtual reality. So it's become more and more passive like that.
So do you recommend that devotees should read Prabhupada's books?
What do you think?
No, I mean, I
think that people should have a regular time that they read. I don't want to, you know, give some particular rule. But Prabhupada said people don't read, they'll go away. Yeah, so we should have a reading culture. That's what I've emphasized in Fiji, but some people listen, but it's really not like that. They're just not into reading. Not Hindi, not English, not anything. And it gets worse as time goes on because of the TV. I would just devour books. Before I joined the movement, I would, trying to find out, you know, in my search for knowledge, I would read almost one book a day. I would just sit down and just like devour the books. I had a bookshelf that was practically as big as this whole wall here filled with the books I had purchased. It's a lot, isn't it? That's my enjoyment. And sometimes I just read the encyclopedia just from
A to...
That's not good.
I love
reading. From A to Z, I read the encyclopedia just to learn different things. That's why, that's why devotees say, you know so much, because I just sit down and read the encyclopedia. And even now, you know, I read Prabhupada's books, of course, but whenever I see something interesting, I get the book. Now, of course, we have this thing called the Kindle. You know what a Kindle is? That means whenever someone recommends a book for me, even if it's about some material knowledge that'll help in my devotional service, I just like push a button and then I have it. And then I read on the airplane, you know, I read when I have a spare time. You can read on the iPhone.
Yeah, on the iPod too.
On the iPod too.
On iBooks.
iBooks. So I mean, so it should be a reading, we should encourage the children like to love reading. I mean, in the beginning, of course, before I joined Krishna Consciousness, I was just reading, like, when I was real young, I was just reading science fiction books.
Oh, science.
You like that?
Science fiction.
So it gave me a taste. So it may be a good idea, you know, you just expose the children to something they'd like to read in the beginning, and then it gives them a taste for reading. Later on, that same taste can be transferred to Krishna Consciousness. So that's, you know, maybe one particular strategy you want to have. It's not, what I've seen with the children, you can't just insist, just read Krishna conscious books. You know, they would be interested in other innocent things. Like science fiction is pretty innocent. At least when I was young, it was innocent. I don't know what it is like now. But, you know, just different books like, or poetry and stuff like that. And then they develop a habit, and that habit is later utilized in their approach to Krishna consciousness. Okay, I think we have to end now, right? Because it's holiday, it's Labor Day, so you can all rest the rest of the day. Right? Okay, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. All